cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Minute past the hour, and we begin this Thorn in the Side Thursday here on the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the Head On Radio Network, America's liberal voice. What we do here, we like to call conversation radio. And if you're new to the process, you'll find out why in fairly short order, I'm sure. It is, though, as I noted, Thorn in the Side Thursday, and we've got a veritable locust tree's worth of thorns, a rose bush's worth. No, I will not be playing that song about thorns, roses having thorns. No, you cannot make me. Ugh. That 80s hair band ballad. We'll get started. We will get started momentarily. Let's just put this out there for general consideration. Every night we try to raise around $100 to keep things going, because generally speaking, we try to raise $2,500 a month. This is a short month, this February, 29 days, even though it's longer than usual. And so, consequently, we will be... we just need folks. $10 at a time, even, is fine. And thank you so much for all of those of you who have contributed to the Thrifty 250. $10 at a time, we'll be able to meet operating needs to keep all of this going. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. I continue to remind people, though, if you are concerned with the fee that that PayPal charges, if you the PayPal account is tied to the email account, bobkincaid@gmail.com. And if you just go to PayPal and do your PayPal to that address, you'll have an option of personal versus whatever. Choose personal, click gift, and there are no fees, no transfer fees attached. Of course, you can always go to headonradionetwork.com, the tab contribute, whereat we keep permanently posted for everyone's convenience the snail mail address, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, West Virginia, 25801. And thanks to those of you who contribute via snail mail. It is very much appreciated, as is all of the support that we get to keep this little effort in the radio of the future going. Yeah. Thorn in the Side Thursday, it is, and we will deal with them. But I'm a sucker for cute stuff, and this is one of those things. I got a link last night from Sandra to a recent episode of Sesame Street, an appearance by Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor, who dispensed a little bit of justice on the program. This is worth it because, well, there's. It's Sesame Street, so necessarily there's a lesson, right?
Oh, hey, hola. This is my friend, Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor.
Hi, everybody.
Un cafecito?
Sí, gracias.
Finally, justice will be served!
Well, hey, baby bear.
Hi. Hey, I heard that there was a Supreme Court Justice on Sesame Street.
There is, baby bear. There is.
Hi, baby bear. I am Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor, but you can call me Justice.
Oh, well, you can call me Baby.
Okay, Baby.
Okay, Justice. Now, to be clear... clear, what does a justice do again?
A Supreme Court justice is a judge who solves arguments by giving his or her opinion.
That's just what I thought. Well, I need you to listen and solve a disagreement.
Wait a minute now, baby bear. We're trying to have a little coffee here.
No hay problema, Maria. I can handle this. I do it all the time. Just give me a second.
Wow, impressive.
I always wear these robes when I hear a case.
Perfect. Now I can tell you what happened.
Wait a minute. I have something to say, too.
I know who you are. You're Goldilocks.
And I know who you are. A Supreme Court justice. The perfect judge to hear my case.
Whoa. Hold on a second. The justice has to hear my side of the story.
No, mine. Don't worry.
I will listen to both sides of the case. Okay? Baby, you go first.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor. Now, does the justice think it was right for Goldilocks to come into my house, uninvited, mind you, sit in my chair and break it?
I'm not sure. Let me hear Goldilocks' story next.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to break it. I didn't know it was his chair. I was tired.
Now, hold on just a minute. I'm not just funning with this. That little passage right there, what? It's a brilliant moment in children's television because it references one of the oldest principles in the English common law. Any of them. It really does. And I'll explain.
And it was the only chair that fit just right.
This is ridiculous. Plus, our cafe's getting cold.
This will only take a second, Maria. Baby, Goldilocks didn't mean to break the chair. It was an accident, and accidents do happen.
Well, I guess that is kind of true. My chair is still broken.
Well, I think that maybe we can fix that.
Yeah, how?
Goldilocks, do you have glue?
I do.
Then, to end this disagreement, I say you help Baby fix his chair, and then the two of you can live happily ever after.
I can live with that. Thank you, Justice.
Well, come on, Baby Bear. I'll fix this chair in no time at all.
Amiga, you are a very good sport.
Are you kidding? I wish all my cases were this easy. Ahora, el café, por favor.
Si.
We heard there was a justice on Sesame Street. We need to end our disagreement.
Well, me too. I would like to state my case.
Oh, this is going to be a very long afternoon.
All in a day's work, Maria. All in a day's work.
Those three being three little pigs and a purple fuzzy wolf. I saw this and was charmed. Because, first of all, I love the fact that there's some Spanish going on there. Because even though Dr. Newton Leroy Gingrich, amateur paleontologist, says that Spanish is a gutter language and has been echoed in that by such third-tier right-wing blatherscape gasbag luminaries as Neil Bortz. The fact of the matter is, this moment opens up children to the idea of justice for all. Now, we can have a larger conversation, and that's part of the thorn in the side part, about whether or not justice is for all in this country anymore. But for a moment, let's just enjoy the brilliance behind this. Because what happened there? You heard Baby Bear and Goldilocks? Goldilocks broke my chair and Goldilocks said, "I didn't mean to." That is literally the oldest tort case there is. Torts are personal harms, civil harms done. Not like crimes, but you know, the stuff you sue over. And it goes back, and I can't, a lot of water over the legal dam in the last few decades. But I can't remember the name of the exact case. If I had my book handy, I probably could, or one of the legal eagles out there in the Horn audience might remind me. But there's a, it begins. It is the very fundament of, not that way. It's the very foundation of the idea of how the Anglo-American jurisprudential system handles wrongs. And it goes back to a really, really, and it's exactly that way. It's an old case that has to do with a pair of soldiers who were practicing their sword work. And one soldier, if I recall correctly, one soldier harmed the other one. And they took it to the court of King's Bench. And on the one hand, the guy said, "Hey, look, I half me arm's gone." And the other one said, "Well, I didn't mean to do it. Really, I didn't." And out of that comes the principle that we understand you didn't mean to, but that doesn't change the fact that you remain liable for the harm that you did. You still have to somehow try to make it right. And the very same thing was at play here in Goldilocks and Baby Bear, in which she ordered Goldilocks to fix the chair. Because the basic principle at work in this is all liability is based upon fault. With harms that are done without malice, it is natural for us to say, "But I didn't mean to." But didn't mean to is not part of the calculus. It is a question of whether you did, and if you did, then what harm resulted, and how do you make that harm right? Because at its very basis, the legal system evolved as a means of trying to get people from to desist in chopping each other up in matters of feud and vendetta. It was a brilliant attempt to create literally civil society, and it's made it all the way to Sesame Street. Now, can you imagine if the guest justice had been, Fat Tony Scalia or Slappy Thomas? Yeah, I don't want to think about that. No. You miserable bear, you're a bear. You have no rights. There's nothing in the Constitution that guarantees. What we need in this country is tort reform. Lawsuit crazy bears going after innocent, adorable little blonde-haired white children. Enough is enough. Because that's the way right-wingers are. And I bring that up because apparently the big right-wing clavern has opened today. It is called CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Committee. And as their opening speaker, they invited none other than that luminary of gaiety, jollity, and delight, Chinless Mitch McConnell.
And I want to tell you this, I always love coming to CPAC. And you probably know why. Conservatives are just simply more fun than liberals. Now, there's a reason for that, by the way. It's because we are always right. Now, the reason liberals are always wringing their hands all the time, you notice that? They always wring their hands all the time, is they know we've got better arguments than they do. So they spend half their time thinking how to convince people that what's wrong is right, and the other half looking for conservatives to tear down or CPAC conferences to disrupt. You all know the liberal playbook. Here's how it works. Pick a target, freeze it, personalize it, and then polarize it. But rarely have we seen those tactics employed with the kind of zeal we see today.
Yeah, because we're the problems. But hey, just remember, wing nuts are more fun to be around than liberals. Proof positive being this show in particular. Not really. I haven't had a full-on laughing fit like I had last night talking to Brother Albert, the sage of Southwest Wisconsin. I haven't had one of those in a long time. And it was just two little words that got me going, and I've muttered them to myself a couple of times through the day, and they still made me giggle. The eye, Bob. God. Yeah, they're just more fun than us. But apparently, Chinless Mitch doesn't have the best staff of writers because he's recycling material. They invited Chinless Mitch to do this same shtick back in 2009, and as part of the right-wing fascists are more fun than liberals argument, he asked the following, quote, "Who wants to hang out with guys like Paul Krugman and Robert Reich when you can be with Rush Limbaugh?" Yeah, I've still got the photograph up here. It's pretty hard to stomach. Steven Tyler and some woman and a guy bending over to talk to her. Steven Tyler looking like maybe he's not particularly thrilled at the moment. And then, to quote my darling wife Agnes, a woman behind Steven Tyler in the photograph who looks like she hasn't had an orgasm since the Coolidge administration. Another guy who's looking at his smartphone. And in the back corner, none other than the guy that Mitch McConnell referenced, Rush Limbaugh, with his finger up to the knuckle in his right nostril. Digging away. Mining for gold, I guess, looking for one of the crunchy ones. And you wonder why I refer to them as booger eaters. Exhibit one, Your Honor. Rush Limbaugh. Yeah, those are the people that are more fun than we are. Mm-hmm. No, really. Can you imagine Flush Flimball, the oxymoron, on Sesame Street? My, that would be fun. He really would do the tort reform the rant, I promise. These are the freaks that want to run your life. These are the freaks who want to decide what you can and cannot do in the bedroom. These are the, or your living room sofa for that matter, or on the floor, or, as the Beatles noted, in the road. Well, that's what it's going to be. They're all going to be doing it in the road if we don't have some moral clarity in this country. It is not by any stretch of the imagination prayer meeting Wednesday on the horn. We pretty much took care of that yesterday. But I thought you might get a little something out of this. Now, I know if you've been listening to Malloy lately, and most of you have heard him talking about the fact that his really, really precious, he and Kathy's precious daughter, Molly, is in her first year of scouting. And she's on her first campaign selling Girl Scout cookies. Who doesn't like Girl Scout cookies? I'm not supposed to eat them, but who doesn't like, I mean, come on, Thin Mints that you stick in the freezer? Come on, please. Tagalogs, Ting-a-lings, yeah, the little shortbread things with the cup of coffee. Heaven, just heaven. Well, the Family Research Council has sent out a prayer alert. They sent it out yesterday, boasting about their campaign against the Girl Scouts, because the Girl Scouts don't try to beat up transgendered people or exclude transgendered people from their ranks, transgendered children. Such human beings really do exist. The Family Research Council claiming the Girl Scouts work with Planned Parenthood to promote casual sex and train girls about living with HIV. Yeah, this is the prayer alert, okay? The prayer alert. Verbatim. Planned Parenthood, the victory for the Susan G. Komen Foundation was short-lived in breaking away from the largest private and tax-funded abortion business in America, Planned Parenthood's activist machine, so bludgeoned Komen, they just can't get away from the imagery, can they? No, they love it. They love it. You know, so bludgeoned Komen that they agreed to reverse their stand. The Girl Scouts, whose leadership has been collaborating with Planned Parenthood for years, have found out, and their cookie sales are suffering. This is very sensitive for the Scouts. The Scouts had better confess their errors and make a clean break while they can, those filthy little females, purveyors of sin in the world, introductresses of moral failing to the entire human family via that dirty slut Eve. Okay, that part's not in there. But you can read it in there, see? Yet Planned Parenthood doesn't let its captives go easily. I guess this is where we would cue up Hotel California with the whole you can check out but you can never leave. And since it is a prayer alert, it's written in prayerful language, and so everybody put your hands in the air, sway a little bit. May Congress expose and defund Planned Parenthood, and may private organizations refuse to submit to shakedowns by Planned Parenthood and others in the abortion advocacy industry. May the pro-life majority grow in America until abortion has been abolished. Now, they're gooning on the Girl Scouts about Planned Parenthood. Right. And after the whole has-been-abolished business, they cite Exodus 23:2, Deuteronomy 21:1-9, 2 Kilograms 24:2-4. What's the periodic table? What's PR? Is that lead 2011? No, that's PB. 24:11 and 12. And then they cite EPH. Ephemeral 5:11-14, and then Matthew 27:4-6. Now, Matthew 27:4-6 rang a little bit of a bell with me. Now, they're talking about the Girl Scouts in their little prayer, right? Yeah. Let's see what Matthew 27:4-6 said. Well, let's back up so we get the full context. We wouldn't want to take a right-winger out of context now, would we? No. Then Judas, which had betrayed him, when he saw that he was condemned, repented himself, and brought again the 30 pieces of silver to the chief priests and elders, saying, I have sinned in that I have betrayed the innocent blood. And they said, What's that to us? See thou to that. And he cast down the pieces of silver in the temple, and departed, and went and hanged himself. And the chief priests took the silver pieces and said, It is not lawful for to put them into the treasury, because it is the price of blood. So what am I to understand from the Family Research Council? Do they want the little Girl Scouts to start committing suicide? By hanging themselves? Or are they trying to imply that ting-a-lings, tag-alongs, and thin mints are blood cookies? I mean, Jesus, this is just a cookie too far. These right-wing turds have actually dredged up the filthy old, discredited, nasty Jewish blood libel argument and dropped it on little girls. Little girls, little 7-year-old, 8-year-old girls. My girls were little 7-8-year-old girls once. How can you not? You know, we talk about this. We talk about the utter heartfelt, well, not heart, but you know, all the way down to the lower sub basement levels of their dank and stinking, vile, filthy selves. The misogyny that the right wing feels for penis-challenged human beings. And sometimes, do they really feel that way about women? Yes. All the way down to little girls. All the way down to little girls. Citing Bible verses that suggest that they'd like to see little girls hang themselves. That they'd like to see little girls commit suicide. This is the sickness that is the right-wing religion industrial complex in America. And hey, once again, you're subsidizing it because they put that filth out there tax-free. Not that you want to be subsidizing it or anything. You just don't have any damn choice in the matter. No choice. How about that? They like it that way, don't they? Thorn in the side Thursday, indeed. I read that and it just crawled all over me. I'd like to look at one of these freaks in the eyes. Really? Really? Really, Family Research Council and Tony Perkins? Norman?
Yes, Mother Bates.
You want to see little girls commit suicide because you're upset about Susan G. Komen Foundations having been caught playing footsie with you? Really? I've got a note here from our buddy Tosh that I think you might find interesting. He says, Christians? I hate to object again, but I will anyway. The folks you were speaking of on Wednesday night are not Christians. They are plainly false prophets who allege to speak in Christ's name. He knew such who exist and warned us against them in Matthew 7:21-23. In this section, it plainly points out that these false prophets to be denied by Christ because theirs is a worship of idols, the pro-lifers, for instance, who implicitly deny Christ, and hate. The false prophets retort that they spoke in his name and did wondrous things, and he denies them for having intentionally misunderstood his teachings. Then Tosh says, I think you're in pretty safe territory, Bob. I really doubt there's a lake of fire in your future, for you do a damn good, darn good job of living and retweeting the real secret message of Christ. Oh, you're beginning to sound like a Gnostic there, secret message of Christ. Sorry, but you do. I think in part I understand where you are, at being that looking at the insane crap my alleged fellow religionists say and do had just about driven me away from the church. When I discovered Sojourners and got involved in my church's growing care ministry where we go and feed people. I'll be cooking chili for one of the local missions next week for delivery on February 18th. I cooked pasta in January and helped in the kitchen in December. So, no, I understand all of that, Tosh. But the problem is, well, the problem is not Tosh's. Because he just clearly said that the Tony Perkinses of the world are not Christians. What we desperately need is for more people to say that. For entire churches to say that. But the problem is that there are far too many tax-exempt religious organizations out there who agree wholeheartedly with the Tony Perkinses and the Donald Wildmans and the James Dobsons of the world. It's frightening. Now, I think were a returning Jesus to respect, it probably would respond the way Tosh describes. But in the meantime, we're stuck with them, right? Corey from the Free State of Louisville writing in, damn, Bob, I haven't heard Mitch be this funny since the whole stop WVU to the Big 12 mess. Dude really knows how to pick the choicest comedy bits. / facepalm. See you on Saturday. Yeah, we got a game coming up. It's another trying season for the Mountaineers. See you Saturday indeed, Corey. And, you know, that thing's still going on. The front page story in the Charleston paper today was about the ongoing, incredibly getting nastier feud between Joe Manchin and Mitch McConnell, two guys who are two peas in a pod. Half the time, Joe Manchin is a better Republican than Mitch McConnell is. They both agree that people in Appalachia don't deserve clean air or clean water, that whatever is done in the service of the mountaintop removal industry is done well. And a reminder along those lines, I got a note. I got a note last night from our buddy John, Dr. John in New York. Run over to Alternet. Be nice to see this thing get some traction. Because over at Alternet, there's a story: the five greatest environmental disasters in the United States. Number one is mountaintop removal. The greatest, and the article says so, it says as much. It says it is the greatest single environmental and health, human health disaster in the United States. Maybe post a comment over there. It's a story by Eric Loomis. Five amazing places in the U.S. in danger of being destroyed by dirty energy. With regard to West Virginia, number one on the list, Eric Loomis writes, nowhere in the United States has suffered more damage from the energy industry than West Virginia. The early 20th century coal industry ran the isolated valleys of West Virginia, we call them hollers, as a medieval fiefdom until the United Mine Workers brought the industry to heel. Today, the coal industry has turned to mountaintop removal to pull the coal from the mountains. This process blows up mountains, allowing the companies to shovel out the coal at low cost. The pulverized land is dumped into the valleys below, choking stream beds and exposing local residents to hazardous chemicals. It leads to the erosion and deforestation that has contributed to widespread local flooding over the past decade. And the thing is, the data aren't all in. There's more coming, and it's going to be even more shocking. While profitable for industry, mountaintop removal is a disaster for humans and ecology. Recent studies have shown abnormally high birth defect rates in counties afflicted by mountaintop removal. The coal industry's insulting response to this study was to suggest incest was the real culprit. And, of course, you heard about this that here months ago. We were among the first to point that out. Even though impoverished West Virginians are desperate for coal jobs, local residents have organized to fight mountaintop removal. That's why you hear every night on this program about Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, who are the actual point of the spear in this struggle. Coal River Mountain Watch is headquartered in the very heart of the sacrifice zone, the toxic waste zone that is mountaintop removal in southern West Virginia. The article concludes, while environmentalists are aware of the problem, halting the practice has never been at the top of progressives' national agenda. I probably should get that tattooed on my forehead. It should be. This is the greatest environmental and human health disaster happening in the United States today. Every word of that is true. I guess because it is Alternet, or maybe because of space limitations, Eric Loomis wasn't able to go into any detail, but one thing needs to be understood, and I don't like saying it, but it is the God's honest and unfly-blown truth. And that is that where it once occupied a position of greatness in this region, the United Mine Workers of America have become a grievous part of the problem. Because every day, some of those 3 million pounds of high explosives that are set off all over southern West Virginia are set off by United Mine Workers members. There's about 1,000 or so, I think, UMWA mountaintop removers. And that's really quite a lot when you consider that there's only about 4,000 mountaintop removers as it is. You can destroy an entire mountain complex with nothing more than a few D9 caterpillars, a bunch of ammonium nitrate and fuel oil explosives, and a drag line. It takes about 14 people. Now, do the long division and tell me that the United Mine Workers aren't an ongoing problem for anyone who has a hope that Appalachia, Central Appalachia, will have any kind of a future. And yet there are people involved in the effort to stop mountaintop removal that spend stunning amounts of time with their noses right up the rear end of the United Mine Workers of America. It baffles me. It frankly baffles me. But they do. So go and have a look, maybe comment on the story. It's at Alternet. The author is Eric Loomis. Five amazing places in the U.S. in danger of being destroyed by dirty energy. So we've had our fun. We've had our thorn in the side. Well, here, okay, one more. This is a thorn in the side from our side. And maybe I'll get some pushback on this. Whatever. The right wing are a bunch of pusillanimous, sanctimonious horses' rear ends. And I think on that we can all agree. But that doesn't mean that our side can't be that way too. Here, I offer you an example of a mistake. Apparently, a sleazy right-wing organization, and they are, they're sleazy, they're called the One Nation Pack. They raise money, and because of the nature, the slimy nature of the pack world, they're able to spend more on fundraising consultants, for instance, in 2010, to the tune of $32,837, than they actually made in contributions to candidates, $20,299, and for that we should probably be grateful. They're dodgy. They're sleazy. They're slippery. They're slimy. No problem there. So they're having a fundraiser. And there's a post out there, I'm not going to mention where it comes from, but there's a post out there that says that criticizes this fundraiser called Scotch and Cigars. There's been a perception that Washington, D.C. is dominated by lobbyists for special interests making big-dollar donations to rub elbows and sip expensive drinks with politicians in smoke-filled rooms. The conservative One Nation Political Action Committee is doing its best to keep that image alive and well. This Thursday, that would be tonight, the PAC will hold its second annual Scotch and Cigars fundraiser, according to an invitation posted by the Sunlight Foundation. A $1,000 PAC or individual contribution buys a spot on the event's host committee. Just a $50 check entitles you to a cigar and open selection of whiskey and wine, as well as good company with fellow conservative guests. I wouldn't go to that if you gave me the golden damn ticket to it, okay? I wouldn't go across, as my father used to say, I wouldn't go across the street to see those people. But it gets smarmier. It'll take place in Executive Suite number 3320 of Washington's Marriott Wardman Park Hotel. To encourage healthy behavior by young people, the event has a $20 discounted rate for anyone under age 30. Attendees will have to dress the part. The required dress code for the event is lounge suit for men, cocktail dress for women. And then, of course, there's the gleeful cackling of, there's just one hitch. The hotel is 100% smoke-free, so the cigars will have to be taken out to the balcony. The current weather forecast for Thursday predicts an overnight low of 28 degrees, or remain unlit. This is where we get a bad reputation. Stuff like that. This is where right-wingers point to us and say, see, they're, look at the nanny state. They don't want anybody to sit around and have scotch and cigars, or a glass of wine and a cigar, or a scotch and no cigar. See how they are? That's what gives credence to a turtle-faced freak like Mitch McConnell saying, they're just no fun! Now, nobody says that any progressive has to go to a scotch and cigar event, okay? But by the same token, this kind of snarkiness sort of reinforces the image that we have that has been created for us, that liberals and progressives are people who want to force everyone to eat tofu you get the idea. It's the annual 2012 tofu and navel gazing fundraiser. Yeah, that's the kind of thing. Yeah. But I read that and I thought, God, quit it. Stop it. So yeah, it's a little bit of a thorn in the side. Let's see. Just checking the email right here real quick. Andy writes again. He says, the problem with the Sonia Sotomayor Sesame Street skit is that it portrayed a fantasy portrayal of justice. In reality, the rats determine these cases, Robert Alito, Thomas, and Scalia, by ideology before any testimony is given. You have on your rose-colored glasses today, don't you? Sonia Sotomayor, the token minority to hoist up for just such appearances. Nice Spanish touch. Wonderful. Well, it was a nice Spanish touch. It was. Sometimes, maybe we need to teach children the way things are idealistically supposed to be before we start battering them with the notion of just how tawdry and effed up everything actually is. Because I would certainly not like to have Slappy Thomas or Fat Tony Scalia on there explaining to a little puppet about how it doesn't have any rights in this country not to be executed, at least not under the Constitution of the United States. We have, and this is the point, I think, we have a working judicial system in this country if it could be left alone to work. Dr. Newton Leroy Gingrich, amateur paleontologist, providing the appropriate case in point, screaming about activist judges, when in fact the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals behaved exactly as the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals is supposed to behave. A three-judge panel heard the appeal, came to in this case, 2-1 decision. It can now go on and be heard in what's called en banc by the entire panel of the Ninth Circuit, and maybe then it'll go on to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court will either hear it or not hear it. But justice is something that we need to teach children about in the way we would like it to operate. That skit might have been a great... I just don't see that skit as the moment to look at Baby Bear and Goldilocks and explain that 1/100, 1% of the entire United States population is in prison, and that percentage is disproportionately represented by people who talk like Justice Sonia Sotomayor, or look like Justice Slappy Thomas. It was charming. And it really was a neat little moment in writing because it touched on the very most fundamental aspect of jurisprudence. Jim, may I suggest what they do with their cigars? I think I know. And I would suggest the same thing. The problem is when we get all precious about it and act like we're somehow morally superior because, we would never do that. Ugh. So there's that. Just checking to make sure that I haven't missed anything. Rush Limbaugh in that photo looks like he needs to have his nose fracked. Indeed. A question from Jay and Barb. Will the gift option only appear with a PayPal account? I'm not sure. I've never, all I know is if I, not sure. If you go to, paypal.com, maybe, I don't know. I don't know. That's you log into your PayPal and then do it, so maybe that's the case. Yeah. So, with the understanding that, with the understanding here that at a quarter before the hour, that this is Thorn in the Side Thursday, and because I refuse to play music by annoying 80s hair bands, my head writer David in Tennessee has come up with a much better alternative. Ladies and gentlemen, Hank Sinatra. We'll be back. Green News is next. This is The Horn.
Left me in the street with no fences. Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Thursday, February 9, 2012.
If there's going to be new nuclear in this country, then my job is to make sure that that's safe and secure.
New nukes for the U.S. New clean energy breakthroughs, ethanol from seaweed, the highest efficiency solar panels ever, a plastic-eating fungus, plus...
soak it in the green goo.
Yep, bake your own solar panels with powder.
Mmm, green goo. All that and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and... snarky comments.
We have seen the politicization of science like we have never seen before.
You're right, Rick Santorum. I wish you and the Republicans would knock it off. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Des, well, we know that the GOP has gone not just up to the cliff's edge, not just over the cliff, but down into the ravine
when it
comes to green politics this year. But Rick Santorum's comments this week at the Colorado School of Mines was even insane by Republican measures, I think.
Yeah, he went all the way down the rabbit hole at the bottom of the ravine. He actually believes global warming is a worldwide hoax, which would require the worldwide scientific community participating in a global conspiracy for 150 years.
Here's some of his remarks this week.
Global warming, a absolute travesty of scientific research that was motivated by politics, motivated by those, in my opinion, who saw this as an opportunity to create a panic and a crisis for government to be able to step in and even greatly and more control your life. I, for one, never bought the hoax.
It's remarkable how many actual scientists appear to be running for the Republican nomination this year. Between Rick Santorum and his comments, Newt Gingrich saying that he is, an amateur?
Amateur paleontologist.
Right. So he understands this science better than the professional scientists do. It is a remarkable year. All of that in mind, what do you have for us today, Des?
Well, first, new nukes for the U.S.
Great.
Our staff has done a very thorough review. The staff of the agency has found that at this point they believe that these designs are safe and that these designs and then the plants themselves, the applications, have met our standards.
Well, what could possibly go wrong?
Yes, that was Nuclear Regulatory Commission Chairman Gregory Yasko back in November. On Thursday, the NRC approved the first new nuclear reactor licenses for the U.S. in 30 years. Utility giant Southern Company will add the two new reactors to an existing facility near the Georgia-South Carolina border. It'll cost $14 billion, and if they go over budget, fail, or have an accident, guess who pays? You do. With a U.S. taxpayer loan guarantee of $8.3 billion, that's with a B, plus laws that ensure there will be zero legal liability for the nuclear industry. But it's important to note that this vote was 4-1. Chairman Yasko dissented. He voted against the new licenses, saying that they don't do enough to require the builders to incorporate the lessons learned from Japan's Fukushima nuclear disaster last year.
I'm completely confused. I thought the Barack Obama administration hated nuclear energy, hated American energy.
Except for all that money that they give it.
Oh, yeah, there's that.
In spite of anti-science right-wingers like Rick Santorum, those hoaxy scientists are actually moving forward anyway with breakthroughs and innovations, like a new breakthrough in creating a biofuel from cheap and abundant seaweed. It doesn't use farmland or fresh water. A team of researchers at a California startup have developed a microbe that is able to digest notoriously tough seaweed and then basically poop out ethanol. Student researchers from Yale working in the rainforests of Ecuador have discovered a fungus that eats plastic. This fungus eats polyurethane, a ubiquitous plastic in everything from garden hoses to truck seats. They found that it thrives in the conditions that you'd find in landfills. This could be a very big deal because polyurethane plastic is a serious trash problem around the world because it doesn't degrade, ever. Researchers at another California startup have broken the efficiency record for solar panels. Efficiency is the amount of the sun's energy a solar cell is able to convert into electricity. Solar panels currently on the market are able to convert only about 10 to 15% of the sun's energy, but these new solar cells have achieved a verified 23% conversion rate. But the most stunning innovation, to me, is the Betty Crocker Solar Power Cake Powder. That's how the researchers at MIT joke about their breakthrough. Okay, it's not really a cake mix, but it is literally a powder that can be mixed with green plant waste, like, say, grass clippings. They've isolated the protein in chlorophyll that enables these plants to convert sunlight into energy. The special powder enables the protein to still do its work outside of the living plant cell. Here's MIT's Andreas Merchant.
The dream is to eventually be able to send people just the stabilizing powder that is benign and inexpensive, find some kind of substrate, some kind of piece of metal, soak it in the green goo that they've added the stabilizing peptides to, and that's basically it. After that, you can connect a couple of wires and charge a battery, use it to illuminate something. You've got electricity from the sunlight.
At the moment, it only generates a tiny, tiny trickle charge, but they're hoping you do-it-yourselfers out there will start experimenting.
Well, with all of the crazy out there, Des, thanks for bringing some good news for a change to your Green News Report. For more on all of those stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Total genius. It's not your mother's soap.
Hey, dude, wait 1 second. It's totally my mother's soap.
Total genius. It's not your father's soap.
No. See, right here, I've got soap for my dad.
And you know what? It's not just soap. Look, it's stuff for my dog.
Holy crap. There's even stuff for all my pregnant friends.
And hippies.
And hey, dude, loosen that tie. Try it again.
Total genius. We got your soap right here.
And don't hear about that body stuff.
www.doublegenius.com.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
It sure is. And about a minute and a half early, as a matter of fact. So once again, we have extra time in the show. I don't mathematically know. But anyway, I'm Bob. This is the Horn. It's Thorn in the Side Thursday, and I hope you will avail yourself of that. The lines are open, of course. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, or on your nickel, 304-658-3333. And there's some changes coming, by the way. I'm not sure, but what, in the very near future, the toll-free line is going away, at least temporarily. I'll try to get it back as best I can. We're changing over telephone and internet providers in an attempt to stop having some of the problems we have had in the past, and to make us a little leaner and meaner in light of the way fundraising has gone. So that changeover is supposed to happen tomorrow. Just a heads up, I wouldn't say a distinct possibility, I would say it's more like a vague possibility that the show might be interrupted by all of the line stringing and stuff that is that attends such a change. Again, I don't expect it to be the case, but if it is, you'll understand why. And if it is, I will I'll tweet. Okay, I will tweet out the circumstances. I hope not. And frankly, I hope I can find a reasonably inexpensive toll-free carrier in the fairly near future to pick up where this leaves off. Okay? But that's not the case for this evening. Like I said, you know the number, 877-443-2366, or direct dial 304-658-3333. And email comes in to Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. And I want to offer thanks. Thanks out there to the first couple of contributions that have come in this evening. We are actually on a fairly nice track to take care of tonight's fundraising. I get to hush about fundraising. Wouldn't that be nice? Yeah, you'd probably enjoy it more than I would, wouldn't you? Although I hate it. I hate this part. And, well, our buddy Kate on the front range, she knows it, and that's why she sends in the emails sometimes, and that's why people like David from Maine pick up the baton as well, just because they know I just don't like doing it. I just want to get behind the microphone and do radio, damn it. Ray, yeah, kick Comcast to the curb. Well, it ain't Comcast. And it's not so much as a kick to the curb as just profound frustration. And who knows, there may be more frustration when this comes in, but gosh, I sure hope not. It should be better. We have to wait and see. Now, where to go in the second hour of Thorn in the Side Thursday? How about Florida? How about Florida and public school, Broward County public school teacher Leslie Rayner? Leslie Rayner is married to a South Florida preacher. His name is the Reverend Willie Rayner. He's the preacher at Hopewell Missionary Baptist Church in Pompano Beach, Florida. Ms. Rayner has a problem. She says really awful crap to her students. She teaches at Blanche Ely, E-L-Y, probably mispronouncing it. I don't think that's Eli. I think it's Blanche Ely High School in Broward County, where she was talking recently to her students. Now, remember, she's a high school teacher. And because she is in South Florida, she has students who are Haitian immigrants, having fled the horrors of that poor, poor country. And she was talking to one of her Haitian students the other day. According to a story reported by the South Florida Sun Sentinel. And this one really just kind of knocks my socks off. And it's frustrating because, you know, the right wing is forever going after public school teachers. It's relentless. And people on our side of the debate do our best to defend public school teachers as they deserve to be defended. And then along comes Leslie Rayner, 46 years old, of Deerfield Beach, Florida. She got into trouble previously when she looked at one of her students and said, and I quote, "I wish they would put you in a boat and send you back where you came from." She was recently caught on video telling another student, "You got one time, chocolate." And, you know, you'd like to look at a situation like this and think, well, you know, it's not easy to teach. It's just not easy. And for someone who wanted to be a teacher to come into that process, well, there's got to be a learning curve. And new teachers are going to make mistakes. There's only one problem. Leslie Rayner is 46 years old, and she has been teaching for 22 years. In addition to saying, "You got one time, chocolate," she is also noted to have said, to have referred to a child as "little chocolate boy" and "chocolate that nobody wanted," having been called on her hateful verbiage. Leslie Rayner responded by saying that she was, come on, everybody, 1, 2, 3, taken out of context. She said, "Chocolate is an endearment in the black community." You know, there's a big difference between playing Chocolate City and looking at a young Haitian man and calling him "chocolate nobody wanted." Yeah, because that's a term of endearment. Nobody wanted you! See, isn't that endearing? Don't you? Wouldn't you just love it if you were maybe a teenager struggling from day to day to survive in a new country that was very, very difficult, and you know, you didn't have much, but you made it to school every day, and there waiting for you when you got to school was the smiling face of teacher Leslie Rayner to remind you, nobody wanted you, chocolate! Like I said, Leslie Rayner has a history. Back when the earthquake hit Haiti, and you may remember we had some firsthand reportage of that because a member of the Horn family went down to do voluntary nursing work. Yeah, Janie. It was a stunning conversation. Obviously, it remains with me to this day. Nobody wanted you, chocolate! Well, back when the earthquake hit Haiti, apparently Leslie Rayner was faithfully watching Pat Robertson's 700 Club, because the way she handled the discussion of the crisis in Haiti, which I imagine was a significant discussion in her high school and in the classroom, she handled the discussion by explaining to her students that Haiti was suffering because Haiti had made a pact with the devil. The devil? Mm-hmm. That line is the single funniest line from, what is it, The Water Boy? By the incredibly unfunny Adam Sandler. Yeah, that's. I don't know if that was religion class or philosophy class, or really shouldn't have been science or history or civics, should it? You know, their luck, it probably was. Haiti is suffering because it made a pact with the devil. Of course, it's not surprising. Her husband is, after all, a missionary Baptist preacher, Willie Rayner. She said that her husband calls her sweet chocolate. I wonder if he follows up with, "Sweet chocolate, nobody wanted you." Nah, I didn't think so either. And then there's this. This is all part of the history that this woman brings to her position. In the same school where Leslie Rayner teaches, another, and you can tell just hearing the story that she is a thumper, right? A genuine thumper. Bible thumper. And that type will not shut up. Just going on and on and on. You have a blessed day. And, well, if you're a homosexual, you're going to hell. You know, that kind of stuff. Well, one teacher at her school made the mistake of mentioning that, you know what? I'm an atheist. Leslie Rayner and another teacher responded by sprinkling what they said was holy water on her when she brought up the fact that she didn't believe in invisible juvenile delinquents in the sky. Smiting folks. All of this, and she still has a job. And here's the fun part. Even after the chocolate nobody wanted and little chocolate boy comments, the superintendent of schools couldn't quite find it in himself to fire her. Even after everything that I described to you that she has done, still, he won't fire her. See, there was a complaint, there was a significant complaint when she did the little holy water stunt. That incident was, in fact, reported to the Broward School District's Professional Standards and Special Investigative Unit. But they dropped the investigation. Called it off. Nothing to see here. These are not the right-wing, religiously insane droids you're looking for. Why? Because that unit and the school board was pressured, i.e. threatened and intimidated, because that's how they act, by a whole bunch of churches, and the charge was led by the church where her hubby, who calls her sweet chocolate, is the minister. So no, there will be no firing for Leslie Rayner, who tells children who have struggled more to continue existing on this planet in their short lives than she ever has in every blessed, every cussed day of hers. There will be no firing. Instead, the superintendent of schools has suggested 3 days suspension without pay and a requirement that Leslie Rayner attend diversity training. See, that's what you do for the brand new teacher who's dealing with the really, really pressure-laden realities of teaching in a public school. You know, you made a mistake. We're going to get you some diversity training. You take 3 days off without pay, and then you come back and you know, you're going to be fine. You'll be a good teacher, I'm sure. That's what you do. This is somebody with a history. And they're scared of her. And what's more, here's the real ha-ha. She's going to appeal that ruling. Really. And that appeal has already gone down, and I don't know what the follow-up is on it. She said, I'm a good person and a good teacher. She said, I have never nor will I ever offend a child. I have nothing against Haitians, Italians, or whoever else. This is a made-up false accusation. Italians? How did the Italians get into this? You are chocolate that nobody wanted. Yeah, I'm glad I'm not a parent of a child in Blanche Eli High School in Broward County, Florida. That'd be tough to swallow. But then again, the child that she referred to as being chocolate that nobody wanted might not even have both parents at home, might not have anyone to stand up for him or her. I've never offended Haitians or Italians or any... Well, I did say something once about the Finnish, but... Haitians and Italians? Fundies. When you can't send them to the moon, you can't. No, well. Jim's at work. I would love to send that horror a Whitman sampler of my design. What a bitch. Get to it, Jim. Maybe a little crunchy frog or spring surprise. Well, good. I've got a little amen in that corner too. Ray writing in, agreed. Adam Sandler wants to be Jerry Lewis and is about as funny as Jerry Falwell. Yes, yes. Noting also, if you don't eat your meat. Damn, right-wingers want religion and hatred in our schools. Right, which, well, that being the right wing, you got to understand, that will be then a good reason for them to close them, and as Jerry Falwell once argued, put education back in the hands of the church where it belongs. You know, so we can teach children that pi equals 3, like it says in the Bible. Or that the sun stood still in the sky one day. Now onward. Here, let's since we've got one school story, let's do two since it's Thorn in the Side Thursday. Ow, ow. Yeah. Let's leave Broward County, Florida, warm, sunny Broward County, Florida, and go north to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Where not too awfully long back. Namely, last week, last Friday, 6 days ago. That would be Friday the 3rd of February. There was a basketball game at Pittsburgh Brentwood High School. It was a basketball game between Pittsburgh Brentwood High School and Monessen. Pretty sure that's the correct M-O-N-E-S-S-A-N. Pretty sure that's the correct pronunciation. Monessen High School. Monessen was traveling to play at Pittsburgh Brentwood High School. And halftime came around. Halftime came around, at which point, with the permission of officials of Pittsburgh Brentwood High School, which incidentally is an nearly all-white suburban school, with the permission of the officials there, students ran out on the court at halftime in banana suits and made monkey noises to taunt the players from Monessen, which incidentally is predominantly an African-American school. They're rivals, you see, Pittsburgh Brentwood and Monessen. After the banana and monkey call stunt, when halftime came, players tried to go to their respective locker rooms, but before the Monessen players could leave the floor, Brentwood visiting Monessen, but it doesn't really matter. As the players were trying to leave the floor, fans surrounded the Monessen players and started making monkey noises at them again, hollering at them, using racial epithets, calling them monkeys and cotton pickers. Yeah. Really. Monkeys and cotton pickers. That was done by Brentwood Players as well. According to Valley Independent, a news outlet, the security chief, Joseph Kazarian, on duty at the game, refused to intervene and sat back and just smiled and laughed with the Brentwood fans in the stands. Dang it. I don't care who you are, monkeys, banana suit. That's funny. Jesus. Welcome to America. You know, every time I see a story like this lately, I've been thinking about the famous last words of Tony Snow. You remember Tony Snow, don't you? That vicious right-wing gas bag who was, for a time, the spokes creep for George W. Bush, who declared that racism is over in America. Yeah. Not so much, I guess. But he's not around to deal with it. Here's the coverage, I think, that came from WTAE.
We're identical.
Well, after the damn commercial it is. And by the way, yeah, it wasn't just a one-off. It started as soon as the kids got there. And it was at halftime that it got ever so much worse. Sometimes it feels like you can't win.
Students in banana costumes at basketball games, prompting racial tensions at a local high school. We just got our hands on this video tonight. And investigator Paul Van Osdell, Paul, you're live in the newsroom with what you've uncovered here. Paul.
Wendy, this happened Friday when Manesson played at Brentwood. Now, Manesson's team is mostly black. Brentwood is all white. Manesson supporters tell me the racial slur started as soon as they got to Brentwood's gym and they didn't stop until they left. And the worst part, they say, nobody at Brentwood did anything about it. This home video shows two Brentwood students dressed in banana suits, but the video does not show what they did at halftime.
The two young men decided to run around in the gymnasium and refer to our kids as monkeys.
Joanne Jesus, whose son on Manesson is biracial, says it was not just the two students in banana suits who were behaving badly.
It was completely out of hand. They were taunting my son. They were calling him a cotton picker.
And they heard other slurs that we cannot repeat. But they say the worst part, Brentwood parents and school officials did nothing to stop it.
This is the school you're supposed to be teaching your children, not letting them go on acting rude and ignorant.
Nobody in that school did anything, and that's why I was so appalled.
We talked by phone to Brentwood's superintendent, who was at the game and says disciplinary action was taken against at least one student. Superintendent Ronald Dufala says, quote, any accusations of misbehavior we've been looking into, most of which we can't get confirmation on. And he also says there's some misinformation out there. But Manesson coach Joe Salvino says he's heard similar slurs at Brentwood in the past, and it needs to stop.
For them to allow that to happen, for them to allow that to go on, is just, to me, is just disrespectful.
Well, the Manesson superintendent tells me she called her counterpart in Brentwood to express her concern about what happened. Meanwhile, the Brentwood superintendent tells me he's been reviewing the videotape of the game today, and he expects to take possibly further disciplinary action when he finishes that review. Reporting live in the newsroom, Paul Van Osdell, Channel 4 Action News.
I'd imagine so, Paul. Thank you.
Yeah, did you notice that? Words that we cannot use. Really? I mean, that's just one of those moments about for-profit media. Words you can't use or words that you won't use. They say that action has been taken. And they here's the cop-out. The students are emulating college students they have seen on television who wear costumes during college contests. No high school team, Manesson or otherwise, or their fans are being singled out. This is just something that students do. Yeah, because when's the last time you saw a bunch of white kids playing basketball and the other kids were screaming, "You bunch of cotton pickers! You monkeys!" No. Brentwood High School, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. God. Well, at least none of those fine, upstanding little white children told them that nobody wanted them. Six of one, half a dozen of another. Two dozen. God. And it goes on. It goes on, the ugliness. And this is one of those where you would cue up Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young, or Crosby, Stills, and Nash without Young, or whatever, and play Teach Your Children Well. Because it is. It's learned in the home. It's learned in the home. You can't blame TV for this any more than, say, Mel Gibson could blame the booze for his diatribe about the Jews! It's learned in the home. And sad. It's sad. There's sad, there's crazy, there's mean. Lots of various and sundry variations on the theme. You remember we started by talking about the fine folks at CPAC who are having their little clavern this week in Washington, D.C.? It all got started this morning with funny man Mitch McConnell talking about what a laugh riot it is to be a right-wing fascist. Well, it just went down the hill from there. Because later on, Cal Thomas, who must be about a million years old, remember the creaky, cranky old right wing? He was blathering away. I used to play his commentaries when I was a little bitty, pimply-faced DJ at the gospel radio station all those years ago. By all rights, he should have been gone to glory by now, but he ain't. They trotted him out at CPAC so that he could get a rise out of the faithful there. Well, this is how he did it.
With us today. Ladies and gentlemen, let's hear from Rachel Maddow. You guys want to make this only about religion, but listen, Mitt Romney is campaigning saying that he would like to end he would like to end all family planning support at the federal level. He would like to eliminate federal Title X. Rick Santorum says that he would like states to be able to make contraception illegal. You can try to make this an issue of, oh, Democrats hate religion. But the fact is, churches were exempt from this from the beginning. This is about providing health insurance. Mm-hmm. And the Republican Party is waging war on contraception at this point in a way that that's where the discussion is at. Cal, let's talk about this religious, because this is serious. I mean, and we laugh about it, but this is serious in terms of if they get away with this, mm-hmm. what would happen in a second term? And we see a lot of outrage, but if that outrage doesn't turn to action in November, what are we looking at here?
Well, I'm really glad, Genevieve, that you played the Rachel Maddow clip, because I think that she is the best argument in favor of her parents using contraception. Yeah. I would be all for that. And all the rest of the crowd at MSNBC, too, for that matter.
Ain't it just funny? Oh, they are a laugh a minute, aren't they? The funny thing is that the clip of Rachel Maddow that they played before that bunch of knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing fools, she is entirely 100% factually correct. And the only response that creaky, cranky, old, greasy-headed Cal Thomas had was that her parents should have made sure she never existed. That she is an argue for contraception. Well, you know what? Rachel Maddow is probably way too classy to say this, but, you know, Cal Thomas, I'm not. The best part of you ran down your mama's leg, son. You disgusting old coot. Lord Almighty. But this is what passes for their enlightened discourse. You know, God Almighty, the Brad and Desi weren't kidding earlier today. Rick Santorum jumped the shark. The frothy one has jumped the shark. The frothy one has put on the weathered leather black jacket, kissed Pinky Tuscadero, and cranked up the motorcycle and jumped the shark. But then again, do they believe this?
They are taking faith and crushing it. Why? Why?
Right.
When you marginalize faith in America, when you remove the pillar of God-given rights, then what's left is the French Revolution. What's left is a government that gives you rights. What's left are no unalienable rights. What's left is a government that will tell you who you are, what you'll do, and when you'll do it. What's left in France became the guillotine. Ladies and gentlemen, we're a long way from that. But if we do and follow the path of President Obama and his overt hostility to faith in America, then we are headed down that road.
To the guillotine? Really? You know what's next? Because the problem of being a right-winger is that you constantly have to one-up each other with the outrageous, the outlandish, and the insane. So the frothy one has effectively said to Ron Paul, Mitt Romney, and Rick Perry, you know, I'll see your war on religion, and I'll raise you a guillotine. So either cranky old Ron Paul, magic underwear Mitt, Or Dr. Newton Leroy Gingrich, amateur paleontologist, now has to say, I'll see your guillotine, and I'll raise you impaled on spits and doused in turpentine and used to light the Vatican gardens like Nero did. Jesus, a little knowledge is a dangerous thing. And I mean, this is a very little knowledge we're talking about. But again, the frothy one was offered an opportunity to walk back that crazy shit. Sorry. Did he? No, hell no. He doubled down.
I just want to remind you, there was another constitution written similar to the time of the American Constitution. That was over in France. They had a French constitution, the first of what I think is 18 that they now have since the French Revolution. But that revolution, and that constitution, by the way, was similar to the American Constitution. There was a difference, though. That revolution was founded on three principles: liberty, good; equality, excellent. But the third was different. The third was fraternity. Brotherhood, not paternity. Fatherhood.
What?
They did not get their rights.
This guy clearly sounds like a Sigma Chi.
They did not claim the rights that came from God. It was a secular revolution of which we relied upon the goodness of each other. This is the less view of where America should go. And, of course, where did France go? To the guillotine. To tyranny. If there are no rights that government needs to respect, then what you see with Obamacare is just the beginning of what government will do to you.
Why? Huh? Obamacare is going to lead to the guillotine? Jesus, really, what's next? Is he going to say that he heard Obama the other day say that he would not be content until the last Republican was strangled with the guts of the last priest?
UK listeners, do me a favor. Run to the local betting house and just give me... Oh, I don't know. Just put a pound on that for me, would you? That eventually, I need a pound at whatever odds you can get. I need a pound on Rick Santorum will claim that Barack Obama wants the last Republican strangled with the entrails of the last priest. Can I get that? Can you do that for me, please? Just shoot me an email. Tell me what the odds are. Right. Eye. And it doesn't stop there. There's more. I mean, there's doubling down going on all over the place. The U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops are feeling positively froggy right now over this conscience business, this conscience BS. But can I ask a question about all the conscience stuff? And I acknowledge what I read on the New York Times blog this morning. Whose conscience? How is it that all of a sudden in America the only conscience that matters is the conscience of freaks who are religiously insane? How about the conscience of normal people? How about my conscience as a father of daughters? Because my conscience says that I will not stop. My conscience says that I will not refrain. My conscience says that I am called upon by all that I am and by the last breath that will exist in my body to protect my daughter's rights to control the workings of their own body. Whose conscience? How about the conscience of a young woman who has no good job, who finds herself, despite her best efforts, pregnant, and knows that the child coming into the world would be a child born into misery? How about her conscience? How about the conscience of somebody who recognizes that this planet is overpopulated past its carrying capacity and decides that maybe she needs, or maybe it's a husband and wife and they just, or, you know, remember the husband who went out into the night in Texas trying to find the morning after pill only to find a right-wing fundamentalist conscience-driven pharmacist at CVS or Walgreens or where the hell ever who wouldn't sell him, you might be a rapist taking it home to give your rape victim. When in fact, they were a married couple with children who didn't want another child. What about their conscience? But the only conscience that matters, apparently, are these loudmouth, meddlesome priests to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Listen, I haven't really heard because I haven't been paying attention because I just had to step away, you know, too much. But, so is Obama standing, firm on this birth control requirement?
Well, it's kind of hard to tell, Sandra, because there's a whole bunch of people on our so-called side, on the so-called left, who are saying, well, you know, you do need to compromise with them.
Well, no, I mean, that's what I thought. I mean, I thought I was hearing that tenor going on. At that point, I thought, oh.
But that's not so much coming from the Obama administration as it is from the so-called liberals.
Well, Well, we know about them. If you look, I mean, I'm still reeling from that poll that shows that they all embrace killing Americans and ending liberty, civil liberties and war. You know, they all are okay with it with when Obama's doing it. I'm sorry to go there, but that's a really big indictment of the left to me. I think that, you know, you can't really call yourself the left if you don't embrace civil liberties, at least. Wow. I'm sorry, did I miss
that? Yeah, no, there really is a bottom threshold, or, you know, some sort of, there's a line in the sand, a litmus test, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, did I miss something? Because it seems to be that, you know, these poll numbers are showing that, well, we trust Obama and that's enough. And it's just like, you know, that's like Madison 101, isn't it? What the hell?
Well, you know, Madison's all busy bowing behind Obama in that painting. Albert was talking
Madison
about
one of the ones bowing. Oh, I haven't looked at that.
Yeah, he's the one that's got his hands back behind Obama with his, you know, Obama with his foot on the right foot on the Constitution, and he's got his hands on. What are you doing? Look at this, and you know, he's a little short guy. Madison was.
Anyway, because it really doesn't make any sense, you know, trying to say it's some sort of religious issue, because why should you know, some Jew, for example, have to abide by some Catholicism, even if his employer is, you know what I mean? It doesn't really make any sense. I'm just trying to figure it out practically, because if a Jehovah Witness was running the place, they have their own beliefs about medical care. Would that apply? I mean, when do you draw the line?
I honestly don't know, but between that recent case that where the Supreme Court said that the Lutheran Church could fire a woman because she'd had some religious training.
Yeah, no, I know. I mean, it's sort of it's a slippery slope, isn't it? But then
back beyond that, there's the case of the two Native Americans who were fired from their jobs, and the setup is that they were fired from their jobs because I guess they flunked a drug test because their religious practices required them to eat peyote. And when they went to file for unemployment, they were denied unemployment because it was deemed they were fired for cause, you know, employee misconduct.
Mm.
And the Supreme Court said, yep, you know what? That was employee misconduct. We're sorry, but it was. But it was an act of conscience. They were required by their consciences to... So, you know, as long as it's, I guess the is the demarcation, Sandra, that as long as it's a religion that, what, 7 or 8 out of 9 members of the Supreme Court practice, we're going to stand up for that, but a couple of dudes seeing visions and staring at their navels as a result of tripping their brains out, nah, that's not really religion. That's heathenism.
Well, no, but I mean, it's just sort of, I can't believe that the whole, it's just getting any traction at all with this, because this is, you know, services provided by insurance. Or what does this have to do with your employer? I mean, if you want to have some coverage for whatever, what the hell does that have to do with your employer? I'm really confused on this.
Well, and that's why I said before I picked up the phone here, that's why I said that the bishops are doubling down. Because not only do they want this, they want to be exempted from the law of the United States of America.
Well, no, they don't want it available. I mean, this is the truth. I mean, this is the...
Well, it is, but now they're arguing that any employer should be able to deny contraceptive coverage. And the walk-away quote on this one was just stunning. The general counsel for the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, Sandra, is a guy named Anthony Piccirillo. And he said, he argued that all employers should be able to deny contraceptive coverage, and his reasoning was as follows. Remember, this is a licensed lawyer, okay? And this is a quote. If I quit this job and opened a Taco Bell, I'd be covered by the mandate. What is it with these? A Taco Bell? Really?
What?
Yeah. If I quit this job, general counsel for the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, and opened a Taco Bell, I'd be covered by the mandate. In other words, I'd have to provide contraceptives. Fundamentally, what these people are arguing is that they're not happy having a secular society. They want religion to be dominant in this country.
Well, and which means that, you know, women are under control. I mean, to me, this seems to be the basic idea, because I always get back to, they, you know, if you can't control, you know, your family planning, you know, you're in trouble if you happen to be a female. So now they're just going straight after contraceptives. They've done with the abortion battle. They're going straight to, if you dare to have sex, your punishment has to be pregnancy.
And I think, and this is the part that scares me, Sandra. I think, I think they know something. I think they think that because they've got a Roman Catholic majority on the Supreme Court, that they can finally get away with it. I mean, you have mentioned, Albert has mentioned Margaret Atwood's The Handmaid's Tale. I've mentioned it. I don't know if this nation understands, Sandra, how damn close we are to that right now.
Well, that's what I mean. No, I mean, you know, I'm about to, you know, because there's a couple of Kindles in the house. Don't be shocked, but there's a couple of Kindles in the house now, Bob, and so I may have to, you know, tap that up, reread that shit.
I would advise it at this point in time.
Well, it's been a while, and you know, don't let me get on Netflix and watch the damn movie. That's one of my favorite movies.
Oh, I've never seen the movie version.
Robert Duvall is the general, whoever the lead.
Oh, he plays. You know, he's a right winger as it is, and he plays a delightful lunatic.
Okay, well, he is the one that's getting some chick. Anyway, you need to see that movie. You haven't seen that?
No, I don't think I even knew there was a movie version of it. Yeah, we'll sit down and watch it with the family, like Disney night.
Right, yeah, you should, yeah, because, you know, it's crazy-ass Robert Duvall, so just by that, you know it's going to be entertaining. Anyway, but I'm just, you know, of course I'm on edge, and I shouldn't be. This says a lot about, you know, my faith in the Democrats, because, you know, women can always be thrown under the bus with this lot. So I'm bracing myself. I don't know what sort of compromise that Obama can make on this, though. You either have access to birth control or you don't. You know what I'm saying? What is the compromise?
I either
can use my dollars or whatever to purchase something, or it's not available.
And remember, they're not just happy being exempted. They also want to make sure they're demanding that the Affordable Care Act be amended, you know, even though it's already been passed. They want it amended, Sandra, to make it clear that nobody's insurance dollars anywhere can ever be used to purchase contraceptives.
No, but this is the dirty little trick here that, you know, that Obama can be springing on folks. This is the basis of national health care. See, that's why they all flipping out. Two, beyond controlling women, this right here is what national health care can be. You get to get shit.
Well, I mean, honest to God, who says that there are a million ways that this makes no sense at all, and one of them is that if you are an employee of a Catholic organization, then you can follow church teaching. They're not going to start just mailing you packages of ortho-tricycline once a month. They're not going to do that.
It's nothing to do with them, though. That's the thing. That's the thing that's killing me. It's like, oh, no, this is a relationship between, you know, we already got one middleman. That's the goddamn health insurance. You know, you don't have the church right there, too. I mean, it's absurd. It's outrageous. But, I don't know. I just...
But you mentioned something a minute ago that I think is worth returning to, and you said it's scaring him to death because this is what national health care looks like. You know, I learned a lot when I got to go to D.C. a couple of weeks ago and talk with a lot of people who really knew what the hell they were talking about, who had actually read the Affordable Care Act. And one of the things that they pointed out to me, I asked specifically about the Medicaid coverage within the Affordable Care Act. And it was amazing what I was told. You talk about this is what national health care looks like. the first, the Medicaid coverage goes up to something like 400% of the poverty level. Now, if you go and you look up what the poverty level is for a family of four, you know, mom, dad, and two kids.
Yeah, it's like 22, isn't it?
Yeah, well, yeah. At 400%, that's up to 80 grand.
Well, that's what I'm saying. No, I'm about to say, you know, you're talking, anyway, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Well, no, and so, you know, at 60 grand, if you could be eligible for Medicaid, wouldn't you?
Well, exactly, that's interesting. So,
and the funny thing is, it's really poisonous to the right wing because every damn dime of it is paid for by the federal government.
Yeah, no, that's what I mean.
The states have no burden in this whatsoever.
So I do think that there is that panic underlying this push, and you know what you just said right there, definitely. Irrespective of what I might feel about the bill that was passed by Obama, this is a huge hole in the private setup. So I think there's a lot of fear about that too.
But they don't dare mention it.
They don't mention it, but I mean, you know, I mean, I was able to sort of garner that, well, wow, this is interesting from that perspective. And you just said you got that information from your time up in D.C., so I think that we must be seeing the same kind of thing.
Well, and the thing is, that Medicaid business, it really sort of obviates the mandate, okay? Because, you know, one of the concerns, and it's a concern of mine, it's a concern of yours, a number of folks in the Horn audience, you know, that we don't want to be compelled to buy something, okay?
Yeah. Or participate
in the profit process for for-profit health care.
Yeah, we've already been buying it. That's the thing. We know what we're getting. Anyway, I hear you.
Yeah, so the thing is, though, if you consider those poverty level standards and you consider 400%, and I'm pretty sure that's the number that was batted around when I was talking to these really smart people, then you know what? You and I are going to fall within the parameters of being able. There's no public option because Medicaid's going to be available.
Well, I mean, and this is the stuff that is unfolding gradually in front of people, and it's also unfolding in front of these freaks, which I think is the main cause of the freak out. You know, I mean, we'll see, because every year, and it completely comes in effect in 2014, right?
Right.
It's so bizarre that he set this up for after this election. For the life of me, I really don't understand the machinations behind it.
Well, I asked that very question, Sandra, and the answer I got seemed a rational one.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are mechanisms that have to be set up. For instance, I talked with someone who liaisons with the state commissioners of insurance, who, if they want to, can have oversight, you know, because, you know, we're all about states' rights, right? Well, they can have oversight of the implementation and the execution of the Affordable Care Act. The state can have the right to do that. Or they can say, nope, this is too much for us, federal government, you do it. And oddly enough, the red states are the ones that are saying, nope, federal government, you do it. You know, hypocrites again. But the thing that was pointed out to me is to note, as this person did in our conversation, that just getting those mechanisms in place where the regulation and the monitoring can be done either on a state or a federal level is proving damn near impossible, because even the states that want to do it themselves, that in good faith want to do it themselves, are saying, look, we don't have the people, we don't have the infrastructure, we don't have the machines, we don't have the forms, we can't. And this is in anticipation of a 2014 date. So some of that, I think, was just It sounds like damning with faint praise when I say it, Sandra, but it was bureaucratic reality, or bureaucratic practicality. So, for what it's worth.
I mean, but I also think, like I said, I find it really difficult to believe that the administration can really afford then to waver on this rule. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it would put other things in their legislation at risk, right? If they give in on this, I don't know. I'm sorry, but a lot of women use birth control, Bob. I don't mean to sound understated, but you understand what I mean?
And as I pointed out in my conversation with Albert last night, when's the last time you found a Roman Catholic family with 15 children?
And so it's just, anyway.
Oh, and by the way, another interesting little statistic. Guess who avails themselves of abortion more than the national average of accessing abortion?
Who's that?
Roman Catholic women.
I'm not interested in blaming, the women of that hideous
religion. That's just the reality of the situation.
Well, it's just the reality of being, a sexually active woman in marriage or out of marriage. It's like, hello, what the hell are you going to do? Obviously not. If you can have birth control, you're going to use it. I mean, the whole thing is just absurd. It's 2012, and I'm just sort of looking at Santorum and thinking, oh, dear God. I'm thinking, Romney is so bad that we have to see this asshole get some traction. Give me a break.
And that's, that's the measure of it. It truly is. This is how icky. And they're all of them living for, what is it, March 6th? We've talked about this. They're living for Super Tuesday.
Super Tuesday. I couldn't remember what date it was, but no. I was horrified and laughing when I saw that fool won all three of those contests. I thought, oh, my God. And Romney got, completely annihilated in Colorado, too. And that was... they must be spinning. They must be spinning in his campaign. What's happening?
Yeah, his support levels are down 60%, 58%, 46%. Nobody wants him. Nobody likes him.
Right.
And it's got to be kind of a sad and icky feeling. But then again, he's just sitting around waiting for the plutocrats to anoint him.
Well, no, and it's gross. I just think that his whole sick is just not playing well. I don't know what the big party bosses are doing, but they must be scrambling. I read an article where they're talking about that pig Christie again. That's how desperate they are.
Some sort of brokered convention?
Yeah, they still talking about that pig coming to the top.
Well, and the other fascinating thing out of this is that Citizens United is biting them in the ass repeatedly, because part and parcel of the continued existence in this campaign of the frothy one, or Dr. Newton Leroy Gingrich, amateur paleontologist, is the fact that you've got these Citizens United billionaire plutocrats who are basically in a bidding war against each other. There was an article in the New York Times today about the cowboy hat wearing freak.
Yeah, I saw that guy for Santorum, right?
Yeah.
No. It's just some sort of joke when you think about it. You're like, okay, so Newt Gingrich, they all have their sugar daddies, and it's just like this. It's no wonder that people completely tune out. This system is horrifying. Sorry.
And I'm not one of these ideological purity people who got all pissed off when Obama made the announcement the other day that, yeah, he was going to use them too.
Oh, please. Yeah, that whole hand-wringing was like, well, what the hell else are you going to do? Shit.
Yeah, I will not unilaterally disarm. Yeah, I wouldn't. If I was in his shoes, I wouldn't either.
I know, but at this point, how I feel. But give me a break. You're going to demand that of him? Come on now. He see, just like we see, what the hell is going on the other side. What is he going to do? You got to turn him loose. Gotta turn them Chicago freaks loose.
Well, and to the extent that he's still got some Wall Street freaks.
Whatever. I was just thinking, well, with this giveaway to the banks, shouldn't they be shuffling back over to you?
Oh, the imagery of the word shuffling back.
Well, you know.
I understand. Word. Yeah, I know.
It's always a nice shuffling around, but they should be because, let me get this straight. There was a liability of $700 billion, and the government is settling for $26. I don't even need to know nothing more than that. That's all you need to know.
That's like, well, I mean, why not round up and say that it was $1 trillion and we've settled for 13 cents on the dollar?
Whatever. It's all just a joke. It's like, oh, and by the way, if you lost your home because someone stole it from under you, here's $2,000. What the? What kind of fucking shit is that? And by the way, it may take 3 years.
Right, because the one thing that's that's attached to all this, the most important thing, is immunity from suit.
Well, for some, though. It's not by all means everything. So the idea that they can still look into that mirrors thing, that's a catcher there, because that's a big problem for the banks. You know, I didn't get a chance to look at their stocks today, but I didn't see no stock market going crazy on it. And I don't know what the share price is for B of A, JP Morgan, Citigroup, and whoever else is involved in this continual ripoff. But there's still some room to get them if for some reason they find out that mirrors is a complete smoke and mirrors, which I think it is, then they're in, I mean, this whole country is in shit, in the shit, because everyone should just stop paying their mortgage because no one knows who owns what. That's the fear.
Well, and look at that indictment that came down in Missouri the other day. 139 counts, Sandra. 139 counts of fraud directed at that company, DocX, and the woman who was the head of the company. And their entire shtick was dummying up title documents. 139 counts. And the interesting thing out of that, as I think I mentioned, is that these are not 139 counts of fraud that are being claimed by individual homeowners. These are 139 counts of fraud that were perpetrated against the county recorder of Boone County, Missouri. One county in Missouri.
Right. And it's just, yeah, I mean, and that's what I mean. It's just sort of, you know, the whole sort of platform of property and property rights, and it's just another house of cards. And that's what that's kind of what I think is going on. I don't think they have any choice but to pretend and extend. But that Snyderman, you know, I don't know if he's been completely co-opted. I'm a bit fish-eye in that bullshit. But they claim to still be preserving at different aspects of their going after these banks. But this definitely relieves them of a huge portion of their problems, but we'll see. I don't know. I feel bad for the homeowners. It's like $2,000. That's like a slap, man. A slap in the face. You've been defrauded. You've been out of your home, and all they're giving you is $2,000.
Yeah, don't spend it all in one place. That'll make a nice down payment on a $10,000 house. Now all you got to do is find one.
Well, Detroit
is maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's. What did Newton Leroy Gingrich call it? That's social engineering.
Yeah, well, there are homes there selling for that low. But anyway, I'm not going to comment too much about it because it's still, you know, I don't know all the facts. It's just bits and pieces and that I've read and seen. So I'm not going to say I reserve judgment because just the fact that the liabilities are near $1 trillion is enough for me. I just think, well, obviously we're getting screwed over again, you know. And the banks and the markets have sort of penciled in this already. Please.
We'll pencil it in. Oh, I love it.
Oh, God. But anyway, something else I wanted to ask you. Oh, God, I can't really remember. Shit. Oh, well, I guess that's really...
Well, no, it happens to the best of us.
Yeah, so you're... you say you're going offline? Are you no more free...
Well,
I don't even know your paying number. I should find out.
Well, the toll free is 877-443-2366. The direct is 304-658-3333. And all the switchovers of the direct line, so-called Hunt Group, that's what they call it at the phone company, takes place tomorrow, and we get different internet service. So hopefully, among other things,
one of the problems I've had, Sandra, is that, you know, we've got this 24/7 stream that runs when there's not a live program going. And in the middle of the night, with nobody using the internet, I come in the morning, and it's crashed. And so I haven't sending out, and it's only 64K. Okay, I mean it's not like we're using massive bandwidth to do it. So that's a huge problem. So the internet and the phone side are going to get replaced, but I have to find a new toll-free carrier because the toll-free was all part of the package that we had coming through the other company. And so I got to, and that may have to. I don't know how long it'll take for them to port port these lines over to this new company, because the new company doesn't offer toll free. That was the downside.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I understand, you know, because I know you didn't appreciate having almost a whole week of broadcasting time sort of ripped out from under you recently.
Yeah, and that wasn't even these guys' fault. That was not CityNet's fault. That was hackers attacking the White Rose server.
Oh, right. Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was some seriously ugly business.
Wow. Okay, well, listen, I'll let you go, but the only other thing that popped in my mind was, you know, did you hear about that transportation bill? I mean, I know it's the anti-union stuff, but the thing that really struck me beyond that was loosening up the rules so these drones can be in.
Yeah, nothing is what it seems anymore.
Oh, my God. That story really is.
Yeah, drones are transportation now? I'll be damned.
Well, it used to be the little toys that you could play. You know, those little things. But now they're making it so that these same things that they're using to kill people around the world are coming to a town near you.
And that's going to that is such a very creepy idea to me. That's as creepy as the ideas of the cameras in New York City.
Or the CCTV that you're required to have by law to have a business in England.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah,
so that they
kind
can.
Of stuff.
Yeah, so
but
what,
anyway, it's just something to keep your eye on, because I think the drone stuff is.
Well, and remember, they're reinserting the Keystone XL pipeline in that thing too.
Well, yeah, and today they also added the killing that contraception rule on the transportation bill too. So I mean, it's just non-ending.
So in essence, it's going to come out of the House. It's going to go over to the Senate. And, you know, to get anything onto Obama's desk, it's going to have to get past the Senate, which means it's going to have to get through committee, which basically means that there's not going to be a transportation bill.
Yeah, well, who knows? I mean, they're also trying real hard, and Obama wants it too, to bring back that line item veto thing for him. And it's just like, you know what, Congress, why don't you just cede all your authority and just call it a day? Just go home.
Yeah, right. Just
leave.
Turn the answering machine on and
go
spend more time with your families.
Man, anyway, okay, listen, have a good evening.
All right, you too. Take care, Sandra. Bye now. Sandra calling from California. Watch the transportation bill. By the time the Republicans in the House get done with it, it's going to have every sickening thing you ever imagined in it. Whether it's contraception or drones, really? I'm going to feel real icky, because it's already bad enough. Because periodically, people in fighter jets in the military like to come and fly the New River Gorge and the Gorge of the Gauley River, because it's some pretty challenging flying. And among other things, it replicates certain places in, Iran. You know, gorges and stuff, and narrow canyon walls where you might hide a nuclear facility, and you get to play Luke Skywalker. I'm going in! Yeah. And now there's the possibility that I get to look in the sky and see drones? This is a Republican House of Representatives. Since when? I thought they were all about our personal freedoms. I mean, I got a roof with holes in it. I don't want some damn drone looking down into my bedroom and watching Agnes swear because it's raining on her again. It's not fun. But, yeah, watch it. Watch it. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Preston.
Well, hey, Preston, how are you?
I'm doing all right. wanted to let you know that we finally got a visit from Old Man Winter. It was fun.
How deep?
15 inches here in Denver.
Wow.
Yeah, it was actually a record snowfall for Denver for the month of February. Our big snows usually take place in March or even April.
Well, and that's, you know, we got an eighth of an inch dusting that actually has stayed on the ground for 2 or 3 days. And me being the eternal pessimist that I am, I'm waiting. You know, we got a big break in December and January. You know, December 30th, the day that my wife and son got rear-ended, it was 72 degrees outside. And that's just weird for around here. So I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop. And it'll probably be a snowshoe.
It'd be good, a snowshoe.
You know, like in April or, you know, early May or something. Something completely insane after all the dedicated gardeners have gotten out their tomato plants.
Right. And, you know, the flowers start coming up and the trees are doing their thing. You'll get a foot and a half, two or something.
Right. Just as the jonquils are poking their little heads through the grip. Right. Yeah, exactly.
We had a lot of 50 degree, 60 degree days there for a while. And I noticed, you know, I watch the Weather Channel from time to time and they've had this ongoing series kind of like Where's Winter? And, it's been warm in spots for sure. And, but we had Santorum here recently at the Colorado School of Mines talking about.
Yeah, that was where the guillotine comment came from.
Oh, I missed that part of it.
But. Yeah, he said Obama's leading us toward the French Revolution, and people who believe in God are gonna go to the guillotine.
You know, it's so much of this kind of histrionics that they do. It's just the world; they're coming at you. You know, concentration camps. The liberals are gonna do all these terrible things. I tuned into a moment of Glenn Beck today, and he was talking about a mass bloodletting. And it really brought to mind a book presentation I heard recently on Book TV. Thomas Frank, who some people may know from his earlier book, What's the Matter with Kansas?
Yes.
He has a more recent book called Pity the Billionaire.
Right.
Yeah. And the subtitle is something like How the Right Used the Economic Crisis to, you know, further advance their agenda, and how the Tea Party has co-opted and so much of like the look of a populist movement with the signs and the rallies and the bullhorns and the buttons, and they pilfer a lot of arguments from the populist movements of the past and even from contemporary liberal movements about, they may even discuss class struggle at times and the elites, yet it's tweaked in the service of the elites. And, you know, of course, a lot of it's being funded by the Koch brothers and others. And how their language, their narratives succeed in pitting people against each other, the usual stuff. And a lot of it's kind of histrionics. And he talks about Glenn Beck, and his style of ramping people up, and he talked about how in Glenn Beck's one of his books, maybe a autobiography he wrote, he talks about how much he admires Orson Welles. And Thomas Frank pointed out, you know, it's not because of Orson Welles's politics that he admires, that Glenn Beck admires Orson Welles. And he found this picture of Beck doing this posture, and Thomas Frank was like, I recognized it from somewhere. And he finally found it. And the posture that Beck was doing was the same posture that Orson Welles had done for publicity when he was doing War of the Worlds.
No kidding.
The whole make-believe, the Martians are coming to get you, but instead of the Martians, it's the liberals. And, or it's the progressives and secularists. That's another popular one these days. Anyway, it was a very insightful, funny, and worrisome presentation. And it was on C-SPAN, their Book TV on the weekends. It's really interesting because they'll also do the far-right stuff and just proceeding Thomas Frank's discussion was alive 3 hours with Mark Stein, who fills in sometimes for Limbaugh, and he also fills in for
Hannity. Oh, I've heard him, yeah.
Show. Despicable. It was absolutely appalling. Well, of course, it's attacking liberals and Occupy Wall Street people, caricatures, and misrepresentation all over the place, deceit, endless. But the Islamophobia, especially, was so awful. He talks about Muslim imperialism and all this stuff, and it's just exactly what the Nazi propagandists were doing when they were always talking about how they were facing the threats from Poland, or, you know, Czechoslovakia is pointed at the heart of Germany like a dagger. And instead of going after the Jews, it's the Muslims. And, you know, and that they can do this with a straight face when we're, you know, two wars of aggression, continuing occupations. You know, now Iran's a big threat because maybe someday they'll may develop a nuclear deterrent. But, you know, we forget to mention how we've surrounded that country with like 40 of our own military bases. We've got aircraft carriers, and in Iran's long history, they just have not been invading their neighboring countries, but we've been involved in them, in their country. You know, the civilized West has been involved in their country in all sorts of negative ways, you know, helping
yes.
the Shah, overthrowing Mossadegh, and then helping the Shah be in power for about 2 decades. The Shah actually killed
I was about to say, with his brutal, brutal secret police. What were they called? Savak?
Savak. Yeah, that's a Savak or something like that. So, you know, just the group delusion and convenient amnesia goes on and on. And I'm sure it was kind of driving the C-SPAN guy. My guess is that he didn't like it, but they just let it sit there. And all the callers were congratulating him, talking about how great he was. I called in. I just couldn't take it anymore. I called in, but apparently I didn't call in early enough. I was on hold for over an hour, but just, you know, I don't think they're keeping me out, but they take calls and they also take emails, so it was moving.
Right, and they've got a dozen yeah. lines. They've probably got 2 dozen yeah. lines because, you know, they've got, or maybe 3 dozen because they've got that one for Democrats, one for Republicans, and one for independents.
Mm-hmm.
And usually, if you've got one of those, you've got a hunt group, and usually the smallest hunt group in broadcast is around 6 lines.
Okay, yeah.
Because that's basically the smallest real serious broadcast system you can get. So they've either got one hunt group and it rings differently, or they've got 3 different systems set up there.
Yeah. You know, for some shows, they do the progressive or liberals, conservatives, independents, that sort of categories. For this show, they did the categories of calling in was like on the East Coast and then the mountain and Pacific Coast people call in. So they had that sort of phone separation.
Weird. I'm not that familiar with, well... But whatever they do, I'm cynical enough to know
yeah.
to think that they break it out the way they want it to break out.
Yeah, and so it was just upsetting, to be quite honest with you. But I loved how it was the Thomas Frank discussion that followed that immediately, and Frank, you know, indirectly was just demolishing, you know, what Stein had just spent the past 3 hours doing. So. It worked out okay. And then they repeated it shortly after. And for people who are interested in this sort of stuff, you know, Book TV or C-SPAN, you can get it from there. And usually they have their book discussions online, available
right.
online a couple days afterwards. And so I'd certainly highly recommend Pity the Billionaire, Thomas Frank.
I read an excerpt from it over at Alternet, and it's fascinating. And it's he's a brilliant writer. And does supremely good analysis as well.
Yeah. He has something on his website that I found very interesting to really bring home this aristocracy here that's being developed, this corporate aristocracy, and how separated they are from us. Rabble, he lives around D.C. apparently, and he went to this part of Washington, D.C. where all these corporate contractors live in their castles. And, well, before he went there, he went to kind of a middle-class area of D.C. and how, you know, this was the vision of, you know, some sort of economic justice and fairness in the society. And from there, he went to these castles of the corporate feudal lords. He was chased out real quickly. A security guard zoomed up and kind of chased him out. But you can read a lot. He also brought home how you can read a lot about a society through architecture and design and stuff like that. And if people really want an honest look at who has the power, what institutions have power in the society, it's not the big government that the right wing's always warning us about. You know, look at the skyline of any big city. You'll see maybe a couple church steeples, maybe an apartment, a couple government buildings, but towering over all of that are these, you know, castles of these transnational corporations.
Yeah, yeah, the mirrored glass, right. Well, what's the most prototypical example? Is it still the Transamerica building in San Francisco?
Yeah, there's that. Here in Denver, we've got something that's often called the cash register building because the top of it sort of shaped like an old-time cash register. I forget who's in it. I know in one building downtown, there's a third floor of Halliburton had the third floor. I was actually a security guard at it for a while. This is before Halliburton was like more commonly known. And that's actually, people were surprised I was a security guard for a while because, I don't know, whatever.
It doesn't really fit with the anti-authoritarian the nature there, Preston.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Yeah. There is that, but there's a lot of ways in which you can take a job like that and kind of continue with anti-authoritarian ways of being. I mean, I was able to read so much good material on the job. Mine was an unarmed position, thankfully, and my sort of position was the security guard who's needed just, you know, for insurance purposes. The building has to have some warm body in there. And it was empty all night long, and so I really didn't have much to deal with. And I carried on that time-honored tradition of the security guard catching a few Z's.
Oh, heck yeah.
And reading, you know, I saw and I met all these right-wing guys who had a lot of these jobs, and they were getting all kinds of right-wing activism done on the job, setting up websites, you know, emailing, writing, reading, doing radio station work, calling in. So they're very active, and I've told a lot of my progressive friends, I'm like, you need some money, there's jobs available in the field, and it can be a real opportunity to both learn, you know, roaming around the business offices for a while. Again, you can learn a lot just from design of things. Like the Halliburton office, they had all these maps on the wall of, you know, pipelines and planned pipelines. And I've had other friends in security work tell me about the PR work that a lot of businesses were doing and how they were responding. They'd cut out stuff in the Denver Post and be like, we got to respond to this, you know, letters that they were working on. It was an interesting experience. I did that for about a year. I also worked at the headquarters of Boston Market and Einstein Bagels. They were kind of together.
Oh, I never realized that they were two peas in a pod. I gotta admit, I was never a big Boston Market fan.
Yeah, nor was I. So,
but I can lose my mind over a really good bagel. I truly can.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
I'm not supposed to eat a lot of them anymore.
Cutting down on bread or something.
Yeah. Well, I just found out the other day that we were going over some blood work and the D word was used.
Okay.
You know, yeah. Diabetic.
Yeah, that's being used a lot for sure.
But at least I'm not going to pull a Paula Deen and start a website offering diabetic liberal radio solutions or anything. So I'm taking a pill and watching what I eat, and really, I'm really cranky. But I'm masking it pretty well so far, I think. I just look at Agnes and go, I want a cracker. Yeah.
I understand, definitely.
But the nice thing is, it came with some good news that if I pull that I can pull back from the brink, that if I exercise a lot and lose myself about, my practitioner said to start with 10% of my weight, but she said if you want to go a little further, that'd be fine too. So if I could shed down to about 220 pounds, I'd probably be in pretty good fighting form.
Great.
But it turns out the fats and the lipids and stuff were what was causing my pancreas to go to war with me and everything. The whole thing is apparently a syndrome, and I have it. I can't tell you how not happy I am to hear it. Well, congratulations, Bob. You've got... we'll weather through it. And if I can just, by getting off my dead butt and going out and taking a nice energizing walk and not eating, three helpings of banana pudding after dinner... I think I can do that.
Yeah, I definitely. And I walking, I think, it's nice physically and mentally. Tom Hartman has that book, Walk Your Blues Away, and about kind of the emotional space it can often create.
Well, I'm kind of contemplating a treadmill, though, Preston, because you can walk your walking your blues away here where I live.
You get more depressed when you see the blown up mountains, I guess.
Well, no, not so much that as the sort of PTSD that you come home with after having nearly been wiped out by any number of rogue coal trucks.
Right. I understand, definitely. Yeah, I used to be a bit overweight. I weighed almost, around 200 pounds. I'm 5'10"-ish when I stand up straight. When I was in college, I weighed a couple hundred pounds, and I was drinking a lot of beer, as people in college
beer is good.
Do.
Beer is good food.
I was going to CSU in Fort Collins, and at the time, you only had to be...
Yeah, they sell beer there, don't they?
They sell beer, and you only had to be 19 to drink that half the alcohol beer, the 3-2 beer. They don't even make that anymore, but... Yeah, about this was over 20 years ago now. I was able to buy it myself. I'm pretty young, and I was eating a lot of fast food. I liked all the Taco Bells and a lot of pizza.
That's the thing. I mean, it is possible to eat well, and it's not as hard as it seems. The problem is the ubiquity of the processed foods.
The ubiquity and the price is right. That stuff's inexpensive.
Because it's empty calories.
Yeah, and it's subsidized so hugely. The corn syrup, the corn industry is subsidized, and Michael Pollan's done such great work on this topic, and he's actually coming to Denver later this month. He's going to talk about.
Oh, you'll be there too, won't you?
I'm hoping to. I'm actually hoping I might be able to maybe videotape it for YouTube. I've been working with a buddy of mine, and he's...
That'd be awesome if they'll allow it. That's one of the things that I kind of miss in not being... I love to do that kind of thing. Like when we were able to broadcast the Chris Hedges lecture for the Seneca 2 folks.
Yeah,
it's
great.
It's magnificent to leverage new media that way, and it's really really gratifying. I hope you get to go, and I hope you get to tape it, because I would love to see that, because he's a brilliant, an absolutely brilliant man, and what he has done in terms of making people aware, How to Eat, that little thin volume that was kindly gifted to me. How to Eat, and one of the rules is, or the rules of eating, whatever it was, one rule was, if it wasn't on your grandmother in your grandmother's spice cabinet, you don't need to eat it.
Right. I remember that one.
If you can't pronounce it, don't cook with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mono and diglycerides, maltodextrin, Mom, can I have a maltodextrin this morning? Better than Ovaltine.
Right.
Of course,
right.
I'm one of those weirdos that doesn't like Ovaltine. So no, I'm trying to, in the spirit of Cool Hand Luke, I'm trying to get my mind right.
Yoo-hoos were my drink of choice when I was a kid. Do you remember Yoo-hoo?
Oh, my son has a Yoo-hoo problem.
Okay.
And the thing is, he's even become a purist. He doesn't like the Yoo-hoos in a can. Dad, it just doesn't taste right.
I agree. I know just what he's saying.
Yeah, it's Yoo-hoo out of a bottle or nothing.
Yoo-hoos and SpaghettiOs with meatballs.
No.
Every once in a while, my mom made the mistake of getting the SpaghettiOs with the little hot dogs.
Yeah, oh, no. No.
No.
And see, I've still got a... I'm still a big beans and weenies man. I mean, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But made homemade, they're so much better. One of the things, you know, I've been reading through, oh, what can I eat, what should I eat? And apparently one of the things I'm supposed to eat a lot of is greens. And that was great news. And as soon as I can, I think one of the things I'm going to do, I noticed that there's like a crock pot with three pots in it. I don't know if you've seen one of these things. But the beauty of a crock pot is that it will keep food at safe heat levels for quite a while. And so I'm thinking, you know, I'll do a big mess of fresh greens, not out of a can. Big mess of fresh greens, and just keep a standing supply of good beans and greens, and then I got to figure out what goes in the third pot. Maybe matzo ball soup. I don't know.
Interesting. That sounds great.
And yeah. Because, you know, it's like your own little buffet at home, isn't it? I mean, because, you know, I can sit down. And now, the problem is going to be what we do to the greens and what we do to the beans. Because both of those are best served by inclusion of a couple of good hunks of hog jowl or a ham hock or whatever in it. Yum. And then the greens. I put the greens in the bowl and I unload about a half a bottle of Cholula or something on it, and away I go. I'm a happy man.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, mm-hmm. just all I gotta do is get my mind right and not, you know, thou shalt not crave hot dogs. Wendy's is not a real restaurant. I tell you what, sometimes I feel like I'm snake bit, Preston, because, you know, one of the things that I'm plagued by more than others is that I go hypoglycemic real easy. You know, literally start, you know, I start shaking and the beads of sweat come out and it's really feels stupid. And so you've got to have something to boost your sugar then when that happens. And so I told Agnes, you know, I'm going to go up to the grocery store and I'm going to get some bananas. And when that happens, I'll have a banana with natural peanut butter and that'll be great. And she said, that's a great idea, Bob. So away to the grocery store I went, and I kid you not, those bananas were greener than my yard in high summer. I mean, there wasn't a hint of yellow about them, so they're parked in a brown paper bag ripening now, and I'm just waiting so I can... Because now that I... You know, a green banana tastes like crap. And so now I'm anxiously awaiting being able to have a peanut butter and banana for breakfast in the morning.
Great. That sounds really good.
Well, if it's good enough for Elvis, it's good enough for me.
Definitely.
You know, he liked a grilled peanut butter and banana sandwich.
You know, banana is another one of those crops that has become, you know, overly monocultured.
Oh, yeah.
But it turns out there are hundreds of different varieties. I heard somebody on NPR talking about the banana and different bananas around the world, the history of the banana. And but there again on a large scale, people learning the intricacies of the food system.
I was at our Kroger one day, and I saw these wee tiny, I mean, probably they're like fingerling bananas, you know, fingerling potatoes are all. I love those, but they weren't any longer than your finger, and they were organic, and you know, heck, I just had to have some, and they were yummy.
I bet they were expensive. Like there again, you know, I mean the ones with all the chemicals, they somehow turn out to be so cheap.
Because they're subsidized.
That's right.
Brought to you by Better Living Through Chemistry.
There you go. And so that's great that you found some organic ones. And
finding organic things in West Virginia, especially where I am, I mean, that's like a crow it, a crow it from the rooftops moment.
Well, hopefully your farmer's market will have grown a little bit this spring.
Yeah, and the question is when do we actually call that spring? So, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's fun when it's open. Yeah, it's magnificent. And of course, I'd like to get a garden in, but that remains to be seen. It's a question of the deer, the equipment, and the ground itself, because my favorite gardening spot was taken up by the great septic tank crisis of 2010.
Well, speaking of gardening, growing things, this may seem unrelated, but have you seen the film The Blair Witch Project?
Oh, gosh, yes.
Okay. I just saw it a few months ago recently, and I tend to avoid scary movies. You know, I read enough Noam Chomsky that I get frightened enough. And or stuff like that, you know. And but I, you know, it was such a kind of a novel movie and done in a way that, you know, low budget and all that stuff. I went to check it out, and it was scary for sure. Well, the lady who starred in that, her name's Heather Donahue, and she just wrote a book called Grow Girl, and the subtitle's something like, How After Blair Witch Project My Life Went to Pot. And she tells a story about how she wasn't getting good work in the Hollywood stuff. She was doing stuff she was kind of ashamed of. And so she just kind of was redeveloping her life and looking for things to do. And she started to grow a garden, vegetable garden, but the deers and the rabbits were eating everything. And then her boyfriend came around and she took off with her boyfriend and ended up on this pot farm in Northern California. And her book is basically a story of that. And I was so impressed with how she wrote it. And it was so much more than the pot industry and supplying stuff to, you know, people who just like it recreationally or people who are using it for medical purposes. Whatever. But it was also her, you know, this meditation practice she's been incorporating in her life, and she's been working at this hospice, you know, sitting with the dying, and that whole experience, and the laws around it. She's very concerned about the potential corporatization of this product. I mean, already they're seeking to put patents on something called Sativex, and I'm... You know, she talked about how concerned she is about just the big pharma takeover of the business. My hope is that maybe it'll become like the beer industry, where there will be these corporate behemoths, but there will also be microbrews and then home brewers.
Yeah, micro growers.
Yep, exactly. And just maintaining that cottage industry. Because even if people don't use it themselves, it's still... It's a fascinating topic, both culturally, medically, politically. You know, there's the whole issue of the drug war.
Yeah, now for me, Preston, the last thing in the world I need right now is the munchies.
Okay, right. But economically as well, here in Denver, where we've passed that medical marijuana deal, that's created 3,000 jobs here in Denver alone.
Yeah. And you know, there are economic aspects that the right wing absolutely refuses to consider. I just saw a tweet a few minutes ago by somebody who said, you know, hey, Rick Santorum, you want to create jobs? How about 2 million gay weddings?
2 million gay weddings, you know, medical marijuana franchises, grow houses.
Yeah.
Yeah, the electricians that get employed, the marketers.
Because they love to use that downstream employment stuff when they're talking about putting a toxic pipeline through the middle of the United States. Well, you know, there's going to be a guy who slices bologna for bologna sandwiches for pipeline workers, and he's going to be able to afford a yacht.
Yeah, yep. And then there are the people who are building the, you know, chemotherapy machines, so they'll be taking care of you after you drink enough of our benzene.
Right. I mean, some of this stuff is amazing. I had an email from our buddy Dr. John just a little bit ago about a thing that's kind of a local celebrity, if you will. a purple squirrel. John writes, yeah, really, found in Pennsylvania, apparently a legit story, question mark, speculation that he's been drinking fracking water. And the squirrel is, no kidding, purple. Purple squirrel released back into Pennsylvania wilderness. Now, hopefully neither John nor I are scammed on this, but apparently there are some people, let's see, oh, how about this? A quote from Krish Pillai, a professor at Lock Haven University of Pennsylvania, says the color of the squirrel should not be taken lightly. Here's the quote. This is not good at all. That color looks very much like Tyrian purple. It is a natural organobromide compound seen in mollusks and rarely found in land animals. The squirrel has too much bromide in its system, possibly from all the bromide-laced frack water it's been drinking. I would raise the alarm. This could mean bladder cancer for humans down the road. And, of course, when we get to bladder cancer, I'm reminded, of course, of living downstream.
That's right. You bet. I've been seeing pictures of deer, you know, with these huge tumors on them. And, you know, there's just a lot of ecological just breakdown and, well, more than breakdown, it's ravaging, plundering, was what Ray Anderson was the term he used a lot, plundering the earth. And, you know, a couple weeks ago, we, speaking of Sander Steingraber and living downstream, we had a conference here in Denver called the Downstream Neighbor Conference, and it was all about water issues, and they brought Maud Barlow, who's involved with, like, Canada's version of, like, Public Citizen, and she's a leading internationally known water rights advocate. And, you know, first she's shocked that during all this presidential circus stuff, you know, knowing how rarely water issues are talked about, and it's such a critical issue, at least as important as oil shortages and stuff like that. And then there's fracking going on all around the country now, more, you know, all around the world, and how that's just polluting so many water systems. And
well, we're either going to be able, we're either going to evolve very quickly to be able to drink poison, or we're just going to put ourselves out of our own miseries.
Yeah,
because evolution is not known for being something that happens quickly.
You know, we're creating a Mordor. Is it Mordor, right? The Lord of the Rings, that kind of desolate wasteland where there's kind of monster creatures were tearing down all the forests and shoving it into the fires to build, you know, smelt the iron for their weapons. I mean, that is our system here in the military empire. You know, plundering the earth's resources, so, you know, $700 billion in weapons now, and then 400 military bases around the world, and now we're going to have how many thousand drones flying overhead in our skies?
I feel safer already, don't you?
Yeah, and how long before those collide with some passenger airplane or something like that? You know, that's just what we need, more traffic up in the sky, you know, spying on us. Really, it's really, it's utter madness.
There are times I think, Preston, that I would love nothing more than to, okay, this is a moment of pure silliness, win the lottery, buy a boat, and just stay out at sea somewhere like a bad Kevin Costner movie.
I know that feeling. I know that feeling well. And
But then I'd foul my props inside the, you know, size of Texas, vast sea of plastic six-pack rings and garbage and the grocery bags, right?
Exactly. But that's, know, maybe metaphorically we can create some sort of boat to float on, and, you know, that's where I find, you know, people, like, doing the good work, you know, like Yes Magazine.
Yeah.
Frances Moore LePay is a regular contributor, and she was on Book TV and talked about her book Eco Mind. And she got into the kind of spiritual and psychological aspects of this earth destruction that's going on. And she's like, you know, I'm not optimistic about what's going on, but I do consider myself a I think she called herself a possibilist or possibilitarian.
It's a good word.
Yeah, she knows how it can be flipped. She knows what's possible, that there are solutions, or at least ways to ameliorate the problems. And even with the issue of empire, which seems so out of control and beyond our reach, it's important to keep in mind examples like England, which after World War II, for the most part, not entirely, but to a large degree, they did kind of give up their empire. And out of the wreckage of the war, they decided to do things like, instead of investing in making sure the sun never sets on the British Empire, they invested in things like universal health care. And there is that bit of humanity for all these decades.
Yeah.
People are still defending it. There's a pretty
big... Well, we need to come to some sort of... And it has to be on a global basis. I was thinking about this the other day when I saw that the Prime Minister of the Maldives had been overthrown in a coup.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is a man who, in order to draw attention to the pressing crisis nature that his country faced, once held a cabinet meeting underwater.
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
And it wasn't some publicity stunt. It was a reflection of what is happening to the Maldives. And we've got to have some sort of global awakening or existential realization that really this is all we've got. That for all of Dr. Newton Leroy Gingrich, amateur paleontologist's hopes for a moon base with 13,000 people who can declare statehood... And, you know, the little science fiction part of me goes, yeah, cool, okay.
It will probably
we're stuck here.
Gated community, no less.
I am sure. And 12,000 of those people will be slave labor. No more air for you. But really, I mean, it's a closed loop and a closed system. And the funny thing is, for instance, when you talk to one of these right-wing religion industry fundamentalists, they always use, and I forget the name of the philosopher, but it's Pascal's. It's Pascal's wager.
Mm-hmm.
They say, well, you know, what if you're right and there's no God? What does it harm you if you live a good, upright Christian life? And if you look up Pascal's wager, you'll find out how profoundly flawed it is. But they like to cite that, but by the same token, Preston, if we take the frothy one at his word, and indeed the global climate crisis is just a great big hoax.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what do we lose if we clean up the planet and we make the air and the water cleaner and we have less cancer and less heart disease and less endocrine disorders? What do we lose out of that? Because as far as I can tell, we actually gain because of the money that doesn't get lost in dealing with all those healthcare crises.
Yeah. You know, that's another point Frances Morlepay makes. You know, she's like, you know, this economy claims to be so efficient and...
it's anything but...
Yeah, it's wasteful and it's destructive.
And consumptive.
Yeah. And, you know, we wouldn't have all those oil spills in the Gulf and in Nigeria and in Ecuador. We won't be taking down a forest the size of Florida and Canada. By the way, there's another pipeline that's already, I don't know if it's completed yet, but on top of the XL pipeline, which at least...
Well, there's Keystone 1 and Keystone 2.
Right. There's another one called the Alberta Clipper, and that moves the tar sands oil to the Great Lakes area to be refined. So again, those Halliburton maps I remember from my security guard days, they're laying them down. But again, there was this amazing resistance. Nebraska Cornhusker fans actually,
there were Republicans who objected to having that thing go through the biggest aquifer in the United States.
So that, you know, that's what the Becks and those others fear so much, that we begin to realize how much in common regular people have.
Well, exactly. It's like what Sandra and I were talking about with the Affordable Care Act. If you look, for instance, at the Medicaid provisions and the
and the means testing and everything is a couple or 300% of the poverty level, then that means somebody with three kids, the traditional American nuclear family of two spouses and two kids or three kids or whatever, they're going to be eligible for Medicaid. It ain't going to cost them a damn dime. No mandate, no nothing. At which point, they are participating in national health care,
mm-hmm.
administered on a state-by-state basis. But they, and you know what? When that kicks in, and that's available to somebody who works at Walmart, you know what? They're going to love it, because yeah. they're not going to sit there and sweat bullets because little Johnny or little Susie is sick, or more importantly, because, you know, chips and stuff is out there. More importantly, when mommy or daddy and daddy or mommy and mommy, when one of them gets sick, it's not going to be a matter of losing everything or going to work. It's not going to be a matter of can't go to the doctor anymore. It'll be appropriately treated, and we'll move on. And the minute that this is the unstated thing, it's so important, because the right wing can't even talk about it. That's where all this business about the government dependence and you're losing your liberty comes from, okay? Because I think the right wing knows that they can't even mention it. I mean, it is the Voldemort of the Affordable Care Act, because if the American people find out that people with a couple of kids making $50,000 a year can have access to health care,
mm-hmm.
well, how... And they're going to look at the Republican Party and say, F you, mister.
Yep. They're really working hard to keep people's minds off of that sort of revelation instead of...
Yeah, because Obama's going to send the Christians to the guillotine so he can have his Obamacare. I mean, honestly, really?
Yeah.
I mean, how is that not kissing Pinky Tuscadero and jumping the shark?
Right.
Well, Preston, it has been a lovely conversation. I'm glad you called in. I always am glad when you call in. Enjoy the snow while it lasts. You'll probably have 70 degrees next week.
Yeah, most likely, and hopefully you'll get a little taste of winter at some point.
Well, I'm a little spoiled right now, because it occurred to me yesterday that this time last year, I was my family and I were swanning around the Caribbean, and it was that's a tough memory as the snow is falling. It really is.
And good luck with your crock pot feast. That sounds great.
I think that's a good idea. I'm going to try to make it happen. Preston, have a wonderful evening.
You too, Bob.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Our good buddy Preston, the Horns resident optimist, calling from Denver. Let's see, a couple of trips down the email. Going back to Kathy down in Arizona with regard to the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. Remember, Bob, that periodically some Catholic bishops threatens to hold their holy communion from a politician who votes against their church doctrine. We need to bring back the political cartoons of decades ago that showed a wicked-looking pope as a puppeteer and the politician as the marionette. And, you know, they did that to people like Kennedy, and it didn't apply because, you know, President Kennedy was going to hew his own path. But you can't say that anymore, because basically the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops are demanding that we sacrifice the entirety of our secular society to their particular doctrine. Now, this is a rhetorical question, but how in the hell is that any different from the voiced fears of the weirdos in places like Oklahomistan that the Muslims are going to bring Sharia law? Because I will be diddly damned if I'm going to kiss anybody's old ring. I just won't. The book, by the way, that I was thinking about, Darlene wrote in, that's Food Rules by Michael Pollan. Rule one, eat mostly plants, especially leaves. Isaac out there enjoying this evening's food porn segment. Patty, those tiny, tiny bananas, those were bananitos, she tells me. Yummy. They are wonderful. So, there we have. Yeah. And all I've got to do is behave myself. That's all.
Okay. One more trip to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program. Okay. You'll have that. It's about 5 minutes before the hour, and I wanted to thank those of you who contributed this evening. We got close to raising what we needed for the evening, but we didn't quite need it. So anybody else that would care to help out, it would be very, very much appreciated. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com, as is the snail mail address. And again, if you just log into your PayPal account and do the send, bobkincaid@gmail.com, that's the address that the whole thing is tied to. And you can click personal and gift, and there won't be any transfer charges taken out of your kind gift to keep the horn on the air. So, wow, what a thorn in the side Thursday it has been. Purple squirrels and racist bananas in Pittsburgh high schools and, huh? Yeah. By the way, just a brief mention, congratulations. Congratulations to some folks in Washington, D.C. I don't know if you're aware of this, but Cliff Schechter, Alex Lawson, and Kimon Freeman have basically taken over WPWC 1480 AM in the D.C. area, and they are calling it We Act Radio. They have literally restored progressive radio to Washington, D.C., and in fact, I guess you could say that they're kind of a kid sister to the Horn, because they are also streamed via the good offices of Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. Isn't Ben amazing? Like I said, this is the 10th anniversary year, and I've got to get Ben on the air at some point just to talk about the history of the White Rose Society. But yeah, congratulations to AM 1480 We Act Radio in Washington, D.C. I saw the story over at Alternet, and the pitch for it in the email was, hang on. Bringing progressive talk radio back. I was like, what? I didn't know it'd been gone. Back to Washington, D.C. A very liberal, progressive-oriented town in terms of folks who live there and work there every day. And really weird that there was no progressive radio there, and Cliff Schechter and company have taken it upon themselves to set things to rights. So congratulations to them. Well, thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen. You who contribute to keep it all going, as well as with your thoughts and your ideas, your emails, your phone calls, your participation in the chat room. Thank you. Thank you to our chat room moderators, Lottie and Sparky. Thanks to our news ninjas, Susan and Gene. Thank you to our blogger, Texas Betsy, to our op-ed correspondent, Reverbo, to my head writer, David, in Tennessee. And thanks to John Fox, who does so many things. And a little reminder, by the way, there will be a PRISM West Virginia American History Chat on Sunday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, so tune in for that. And thanks, of course, to Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the folks at Cold River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. Go there, sign up for the email newsletter, maybe buy yourself a T-shirt, maybe contribute. Join up however way you wish, and become a part of the ongoing struggle to bring justice to this unjustly treated land. CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.